Quindi stai mandando la fila. Vedi domani. Welcome to the schedule meeting on the portfolio committee yesterday. Welcome to take down all of the Akan from that kind of year 2017. We will be making this trip more often. Get used to it. I think let's start so that we then finish on time. I don't have any apologies from my side from the honorable members. I'm sure they are on their way, those that are not here. From the officials, I'm aware that the CEO of SRA is running late from airport to here in terms of traffic. So I suggest that we deal with the issue on NHDRC first, and then we deal with SRA afterwards. If it's agreeable. Thank you so much. There are your honorable members and me. We have started, so please don't give us any news reports. We are going to start with NHPRC. NHPRC is a short acronym for National Home Builders Registration Council, those that you might know. It's an entity of Mr. President. We interacted with them the last time on the 8th of November 2016, when we wanted to have a sense on how they are dealing with irregular extension that was identified by the AG. They came and presented. We just want to keep them on their toes. So we call them back now to just make sure that they can give us progress on what they are doing and what is now existing. Remember, they were here in November on the 8th. So it's not going to hold us to deliver. So we just want to make sure that they don't relax until we've been there, they're not going to call us again. They must, every entity must know that we will call them anytime we want. So that's why you are back. We just want an update in this person on the report that you gave us on the 8th. If we can hand over to you to present, and then we'll take it from there. Just start by introducing everybody who's with you, and then go straight to the report. You will notice that there's new faces in the committee. So some of them don't know me. I might know all of you, but some of them I don't know. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. And thank you for allowing us the opportunity to be here. And good morning, Honorable Members and colleagues. I want to say how grateful we are for to be given this opportunity. And may I first of all, before I give the address to the Honorable Chair, to apologize to the acting CEO, Mr. Hassan, for not being here. He hasn't been able to be here, and he's been here. So he's doing it just very quickly. I would also like to introduce our team on my extreme right, Dr. Malada. Dr. Malada is the head of strategy, so he's in charge of the agency, strategic planning, all of those documents. He is supporting, in fact, he leads the team. Concerns. demand planning, integration, and business. There was a lack of appropriate control, monitoring, compliance within the SCA functions, that's the supply chain management functions. There was an absence of critical SCA skill within the organization. That was highly problematic and led to a lot of the issues that council found that actually caused those issues. In addition to that, there was really limited business user knowledge and discipline and accountability for compliance with SCM requirements. And also, there was inadequate contract management control by the contracting group. So we with all of these issues that were contributing to that huge amount of irregular expenditure in the organization during those years. Council then decided that we needed to have a specific response and we are very management aligned. And the response that we decided to implement, first of all, was that we needed a full and well-capacitated SCM team with all the skills in order that they can address the challenges. Secondly, what we did is that we said we need a comprehensive, independent, maturity assessment to be carried out on the SCM function with a view to developing the particular function. But we also said that all SCM, unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless expenditure policies need to be, first of all, put together and then council approve this particular policy and then this was implemented. So it took a bit of time to put that together, but that's what we did. Then we started to ensure that there was going to be monitoring and evaluation and control and consequence management for all non-compliance. So we already started that process. Then there was a need to ensure that there was improved analytical and reporting capabilities because if we were not getting analysis, if we were not getting analytical issues properly being dealt with, the reporting was not going to be good. So we said we want those capabilities to be improved. We also asked for and management assisted us and the organization went into the implementation of demand management, integrated and budgeting and planning processes. And then these were carried out to fully understand the business requirements and to inform the SCM resources requirements. The implementation of contracts then for less than 500,000 were implemented instead of the free quote for the issues, for the items that were frequently purchased. Then, of course, it was important for us to train the end users on SCM policies, procedures, and the specific accounts to these issues. Chairperson, we needed to get the environment right, and we needed to get a new discipline into the organization to ensure that it's properly functioning. So once we had that right, then we could start to report. Then, Chair, what we did was that we actually said that we need a council task force. So we set up our council, that's what we did. Council set up a task team, and what we did was we started to oversee or the task team was set up to oversee and recommend coordination only where that was applicable. So that was the first thing. Then what we did is that we actually asked for an independent auditing company to be contracted to conduct investigation independently. We did not want that to be done in-house. We wanted it to be done by an independent company so that they were removed and it wasn't managers who might be implicated who might be doing this work. Then legal opinion was sought on policies, on procedures, and condoning authority. And as far as this, we had to make sure that this pertained particularly to irregular expenditure that needed to be done, because we did not want to be working outside the law. Then audit, the fee audit was and volume two will be completed by March 2017 and will come to our next meeting of council. So we're very clear, Chair, that we tried really hard to start addressing those issues. We had directions from the Foreign Committee, we sent you, and we put a lot of effort into ensuring that the progress is actually accepted. Chair, I just want to go back. On the 31st of January, council had a meeting where council was requested to condone irregular expenditure. Council then decided and resolved that it will not just condone irregular expenditure. What council did was that council resolved that that the executive needed to provide the name of a responsible person. And what it also resolved was that action needed to be taken against officials who have not complied with policy and procedures. And this process, Chair, I'd like to say, is currently being rolled out. As of yesterday, we had a meeting with the Minister of Staff. We also had a meeting with, just for us to be able to determine that we needed to ensure that we knew what was happening. We wanted to take notes of progress, and we wanted to ensure that all the processes that had been undertaken were being undertaken within the legislative arena, that they were within the labor laws, within treaty regulations, the CFMA, so all of that we needed to ensure that whatever processes were being undertaken, that this was happening. We also requested that the determination of the name be made on the basis of the Ernst & Young independent report. Because there was another schedule that was done, but that there was no in-depth interrogation of that particular piece of work. So we decided it had to be done on an independent piece of work, so the EY report is going to be used as a basis for the particular report that we provided to us with all the information. Chairperson, what we also asked for is that we needed this particular team to delineate between the different types of alleged offences. For instance, some of the alleged offences were that people did not comply with, for example, the number of days, and that is why that particular expenditure was done in the media. Because instead of advertising for 21 days, they advertised for 18 days, and what we realized is that in between there might have been some days or some in between, so it didn't quite add up to the 21 days. So we're saying, let us tell us exactly what the nature of the alleged offences was. In addition to that, we're also saying some of the offences are such a nature that there will be forensic investigation that will be required. So even if some of that is different, please let us look at that so we get an understanding of exactly what the nature of the irregular expenditure was and what form irregular expenditure should be advertised in. Chairperson, that is where we are at the moment. We've also taken this particular team that's working on this particular issue off with the management team. So because some of the managers have been and we see allegedly implicated. So we're saying we don't want the managers to be working on this particular angle. So we've taken it out and he is being handled, and I've actually said within a week I would like to see what progress you have made and then we will take it. And I suspect you, Chairperson. Honestly, thank you that we are working on the issues of irregular expenditure and of conflict management. We've started to put the processes in place. We will come back to you at least if we're able to report to you, at least on a quarterly basis, if you would like us to come quarterly, or whenever the Housing Commission is able to do this. I certainly hope you can come to us to address the issue that you are asking.
Thank you very much, Grant. Any additions from thank you so much for that update. Remember, colleagues, we've been dealing with this issue last year, and they came to us and said after we had discussed with them this irregular expenditure. They are here now to give us an update on what has been done and what progress has been made. Remember, this is something that we will continue to do in the year. They will be both here, certainly council casting better independent or the governing has been appointed. A meeting with the treasurer has taken place in September, and they are looking at further investigation and possibly forensic investigation. That's the matter. From that time we went to the event, we have actual comments, colleagues. Honorable Sikole, I know this is something that has been very close to your heart. Honorable Sikole, any other person who wants to comment? Okay, and then Honorable Akbaraj. Can you start, Honorable Remy?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the report is quite detailed. I think the presenter also. I think they've chosen her for the year. She's quite she's walking the talk. You can see that she's also feeling it. We are quite unhappy because we're talking about lot of money here. And this money should be assisting lot of people in South Africa that were excluded by apartheid regimes. So we have a duty as entities to reverse the imbalances of the past, uplift those that were marginalized. Now, if we allow money to go where we didn't decide, then it becomes irregular. But, Chair, how the lady emphasized the actions that they are taking, it's like they are, we may just impress Uchi move a little bit faster, because this process has taken too long, to be honest. But it's better you do it correctly, because any legal matter must be done correctly. But taking too long doesn't mean you are now correct because you are wrong. So within a short space of time, you can be correct. So please, but generally, Chair, I think because our worry is when we meet with yourself, we don't want to meet discussing how many monies you have done in a different way. We want to discuss progress. How are we helping the South Africans that were marginalized by apartheid? We are clear why we are the government. The reverse, the imbalances of the past. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much,
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, Chairperson, my thanks for the presentation, because help us to understand. But mind what I want to find out, they supposed to have the specific today. Today, are they going to have that specific thing? And what I want to find out about that 19 resigned officials, what steps have been taken for them? Because you cannot say they resigned, 19 resigned, but they can't get going to what they And then what I want to find the commission and the creation of the commission of the forensic investigation. How long does it take? That one will take.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sikole. You were supposed to have a special session today. You are here. So they want to know now, because we are here, what happened to that special session. Honorable Nana Kamash.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me appreciate the presentation made by our MCTO, and I appreciate that the council stands on the way is leading in making sure that the issues that were raised by the Auditor General and ourselves, the Portfolio Committee on the Irregular Expenditure, are addressed and also taking steps to appoint an independent federal court task to dig up on what has really happened, and that will come up with a having said that, Chairperson, I just want to propose that after the council has looked at the deliberated on those reports, maybe it would be wise for the department and the entity to come back as part of our quarterly monitoring of the department and this entity to come back and give us a briefing on those new developments in order for us to be able to conclude this matter in time. If it was practically possible, I'm not sure because financial year is quite busy for what department would love to have that by end of the financial year. But if it's not practically possible, Chairperson, something that should be done by beginning of April, within April, if I may propose the Chairperson. But having said that, Chairperson, I just need a clarity on the last bullet of the subtopic of the presentation under organizational response to supply chain management challenges. The bullet number two that says supply chain management and authorized regulations and expenditure and triple B policy has been drafted and approved by the council. Maybe let me direct this to the new chair to DG if that's possible. I'm a little bit confused by drafted and approved by the council. I thought with standard, these ones are just standard, comes from treasury, FMA, and all of us, all levels of government, be it local or non-local, they have their own municipal financial management set, and say provincial departments, entities, national and government entities. I thought if it was something that states that they are developing, how are they going to make sure that these are implemented correctly? And how are they going to manage? Then I would understand. If I could just say, Chair, I'm particularly very much happy with the last two, three bullets that talk to control frameworks and all other issues that are related to supply chain policies and accountability. And we hope that the council will make sure that all these are implemented by the executive. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, President. Remember, we are coming back into the legislature. We need to thank the if we can respond and then the decision will be made with the council. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honourable members, for the questions, and I'm very glad that I was able to present these issues to you. I appreciate what you said. We will try as far as possible if we really feel that the issue has taken too long. We like yourself, we believe that we need to be able to bring closure, but also to make sure that we're rate saving and that we're able to utilize whatever money we have within for probably within the country rather than it's going into people's pockets. We certainly cannot do that. We certainly will take your advice on that and we will see and go forward on that basis. You referred to the meeting that was convened for today. Yes, it was. We've actually rescheduled our council meeting for the 27th of February, and we felt that since we were requested to meet here, we should honour the request of the Polygon to meet here. And the council can have the meeting at a later date, which is what we preferred at this meeting. So we've done that. Insofar as the process of the 19 people who have resigned, that the process of consequence management is taking place currently as far as those people are concerned. So they're not going to be suspended. So for every project in the place and keep track what is happening so that we can try to ensure that this matter is turned into the real life. Madame Kamash,
the Honourable Madame,
we would like to be able to come back regularly and report just before the committee. And as Madame Chairperson has said, Honourable Madame has said that we will be here on the 28th, but if we require to come there more regularly and on a quarterly basis, we will certainly be here. Whether it's at the end of the financial year or whenever we are invited, I think that's the case. And may I just respond, or may I just talk to the issue of the bullet as far as the regular inspector, the policy is concerned. My understanding is that every organization has policies, procedures, whatever to govern the organization. But every single policy that was drafted within, and I talk about the NHBRC, it complies with every piece of legislation that is relevant to that particular issue. So even the SEM policies, all of those, they comply with TFSA, and that is the policy, for example, or all the SEM policies will be drafted on the basis of whatever legislation under which it falls. So, but then we would say in that policy that SEM, NHBRC, that is expected to do. NHBRC's people are expected to do. And that is why it's drafted in that way, but it is not, it doesn't in any way contradict what the overriding policy of the country is, of the legislation of the country. And it's that then that is interrogated within council, and council will include that as the as policy that will then dictate the way in which SPM or any of the other policies can be implemented in the organization. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. There was a specific question from Madam Kamash about the supply chain forests process. We are guided by the first FM of the Climate Management Act, and also further regulations about commodities. But entities and departments are allowed to use the treasury regulation and the PFME to draft their own supply chain management policy and custom them for the organization. The question is, you want to deal with the issue of transformation in the organization. You use PFME and treasury regulation of the time to draft your own supply chain management policy, as long as they are not involved with the primary issue of this case, the PFM and the treasury regulation. Then this one level is the national entity provincial and provincial entities. They are all governed by the Public Finance Commission. Chair, we are of the view that accounting authority in this case, the board of NHBRC is only in the business itself, anything in between the management of the community to resolve the issues that will affect the brand of the organization, will affect the reputation of the organization, the business and justice, the way it exists at the moment. So if you don't know the street, and is it an organization that is entrusted to regulate the sector and make sure that we protect and improve the land fire? It will become very difficult in the long run for the customer or the client to continue paying if we have all of these issues coming in the context of unresolved. I mean, the sooner we resolve them, for the organization and for the management as a whole,
Structure is going to be done by the department.
moving through the discussion afterwards. Is this a bit okay? Right. Thank you so much. Over to you,
Mr. Chairperson. Mr. Chairperson, I'll do the turnout strategy and then I'll do the pipeline. Jefferson, I'm also not alone. My name is Rory Gallagher. I'm the CEO of Shaw. But I'm also present with two council members, Mr. Ishan Higgins, who is on my right. And also Advocate Ngudu, who I think is sitting on my right, who is a member of the HR Committee and also of the Audit Committee. Mr. Kurile Botswana will of course agree to join me. He's a member of the Executive Committee preparing for the CEC to approve the pipeline. So, Chair, I'll start with the turnaround strategy. Could I just give you guidance? How much time must I use, Chair?
How much time do you want to use? Because I know you can, if you are not monitored, you can still negotiate. I know you. But how much time do you need?
The reason I'm asking, Chair, is because then certain slides have had details in the committee has got detail. Those slides I won't go through all of the detail. I'll speak to the main thrust. So, Chair, as far as the turnaround strategy of the Shaw is concerned, the turnaround strategy was a multifaceted strategy because we had to look at the Shaw as an entire organism. And so the first part of the turnaround relates to the state of government. And as you're aware, and the committee did ask me questions about it when we presented the annual report, as you're aware, we have had some audit findings the last few years regarding irregular expenditure. So one of the first things that had to be done is that we had to regularize prior year's irregular expenditure, which has now been done, and all of that prior year irregular expenditure. And let me just clarify that by irregular, it meant that when the money that was ultimately spent was approved by the former council, the council was not formal. So that was the nature of the irregular. Now, all of those decisions of the former council have been regularized, and so therefore the auditors are satisfied with the treatment of the irregular expenditure, and we don't need to support getting further findings as much as possible. We also had to, at a government level, condone and put to the performance of the council. They had not been approved, so that our minute books and all the records are date, signed by the chairperson of the committee, signed by the chairperson of the council, and open to scrutiny by others and auditors. Also, at the level of governance, I think it's very important to point out that the quality of the decision making and oversight and policy making by the Shaw Council has also been attended to. So, the full record keeping for council meetings is up to scratch, and council makes its decisions on the basis of formal pre-scheduled meetings where each decision is supported by a report and a single resolution. And that's a major step forward, and it was one of the complaints that the department used to have, that the council used to have ad hoc meetings convened at short notice without reports, and that's how things have passed. So we should have had to think. And at the executive level or management level, we also had to implement certain improvements in the management systems and communication. And of course there are unit management meetings, more page one. Page one is complete Jefferson. I'll come back to page one in a moment. The second phase then deals beyond the people and the strategy to the actual guts of the organization, which is the operations, the culture of the organization, and the systems. And that is the stage that you believe the present. Phase two, the operations. Following items have been included in phase one. First of all, your strategic plan has been revised.
Just in one moment. Another point. We let you know with this document, but remember, for the fit to the presentation. So some of the things that you will be thinking about that are not in the presentation. This is the one that you want. Okay, we are now on page four. Performance.
Strasse goes beyond merely capacity building or merely institution building. What it now does is you take a broad approach and also take a regional approach and also make sure that underpinning everything that you do from a capacity building point of view is sustainability and transformation. And that explains the name change, which I could speak at length about for just a time. So Chair, this slide gives some indication of the main highlights and the changes. First of all, there used to be three executives reporting to CEO. There's now four executives because of what I've just explained. We though did not inflate government short of money. We did not inflate the headcount. We had 44 funded positions, not funded, we had 44 approved positions on the old structure. We still got 44 approved positions on the new structure. So while we didn't have enough money for the 44 positions in the first place, fortunately Treasury and the Human Services Department has thought it fit to increase our ops budget by 8.5 million, which then makes it possible to populate the structure and help us a great deal. But we've been conservative in the size of the structure. The structure is also a fairly flat structure, it's not a long hierarchical structure. We've indicated on the third line what I said there. And then investment team previously used to consist of managers, they kept the project into the pipeline and more grants and match grants. But as you can see on the right hand side, that's no longer the case. The investment team is now consists of portfolio managers. Let's go back for one moment. It's very difficult to see, but if you look under the second yellow box on the right, you see there that you've got the project development funding executive, and then underneath that middle block says the portfolio manager. Now that's a really important change, Chairperson, because what we've done is we've solved the fragmentation, which impacted negatively on performance in the past. So what we will now do is we'll now have portfolio managers that will be responsible for ensuring that they package good projects and that they're held accountable for those projects delivering ultimate and final completion. So I know there's only one box there, but we can employ as many portfolio managers as we have projects. So the more projects we generate, the more portfolio managers. Just in case. And Chairperson, as far as the next step is concerned, phase one being complete, we then went on a two-phase recruitment. By the way, I must indicate to the committee, we only had 20 people. You know, our mandate is considerable. We only had 20 more bodies. So we are very, 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 very strict. But we could not recruit until the minister had approved the new structure, which we, as you know, as I indicated, the minister did approve the new structure in December. So we immediately commenced recruitment. And I think some of the members would have seen both on our website and in two of the national newspapers that we advertised several positions, 12 in total, beginning in two phases. We advertised several positions and they closed on Friday. And the interest in those positions has been substantial. We received over 950 applications for those positions. In fact, for 10 positions. It works out to an average of 95 applications per position. We're now moving on to phase two, Chairperson, which is the operations, culture, and systems transformation of the organization. It really commenced, commenced last year with the procurement stage, but it's commenced as far as finalizing the procurement and deepening search rights and so on in February. And we will be completed with phase two. So we're not in transformation, sorry, not in restructuring mode forever. We'll complete phase two by March next year. It will include the revision of all of our policies, a comprehensive policy review, some of the policies that are good to get reaffirmed, policies that have gaps to get reaffirmed. Improve the development of standard and operating procedures, standard operating protocols. It will include the information technology upgrades, automation to make the organization more effective. And lastly, but very importantly, it will include corporate culture change to make sure that the way that the habits of the organization, the behaviors of the organization are set to achieve results. So Chairperson, the next seven slides go into detail of each of the phase two projects. Now, on the phase two projects, there are a total of seven. So it's not an open-ended restructuring. It's very specific to certain key areas in the organism that we think is going to make the SHA ultimately long-term sustainable. So the first one is the operational frameworks and methodologies. And this I referred to already as predominantly standard this project. You see that we refer to online portals to enable easy application to court first patent grants. And also, because one of our key audit findings in the last cycle, from internal auditors, not from external auditors, was about our IT governance. So it also sorts out any weaknesses in our IT governance. Third project is monitoring and evaluation, chairperson, because this is a very important one, because we have we have three key work streams or line functions: projects, the regulator, and sector development and transformation. And they can't write their own health report. They need an independent report written from an MD person before they get submitted to your committee and to the department of the minister, so that we actually verify the evidence and we know that the report that we are giving is accurate, but also that it meets the targets and our strategy. So we have an independent from my function, not independent obviously from my responsibility, and that any function within it would be located to the CEO. The fourth project is to update the sector development toolkit. So the committee in case not clear what those are, what the toolkits are is when we want social housing institutions, but even other development agents, to get a job done, and we want them to have strong operating systems so that after they build the house, the houses, they manage the houses, they tenant the houses according to best practice. We produce toolkits. We don't expect people to necessarily be 100% experts right at the beginning. Now, our toolkits are outdated. They were developed many, many years ago under the SDSH and under the SHF. And some may be in the early days of the SHRA, but I don't think so. And these need to be updated. They're very good toolkits, but they have dates and they have ages. So that's the fourth project. The fifth project is the rebranding of the entity, because this has been a lot of damage to the reputation of the entity. People for years have said more about the SHRA than positive things, and we don't want that bad for everybody, including for our shareholders, including for the executive authority and the government. So there's a deliberate communication and marketing and rebranding project that's been included in the turnaround phase two. That also goes to making sure that there's a sustainable rebranding and repackaging of the SHRA, because we must also change the behavior of the people who work for the SHRA, and improve their morale and enhance performance, most importantly. And the second project, chair members, is the culture change intervention. It's very much a human resources intervention. Even though it's listed as number six, it doesn't matter, it doesn't mean that it happens at six. This happens concurrently, because I think I would advise the committee that the other projects in here are technical. They require good systems, good documents, good things, but it's the people that are the most important thing. And so what we're really trying to achieve is an attitudinal change for people to be driven, for people to be true public servants, and to be service orientated, and to place the objective of what the SHRA is trying to achieve for people who are underhoused above their own personal objectives. But that takes a lot of skill, because human beings are human. And then the second one, chairperson, is the recruitment agencies. And that has already started, because we have to fill ultimately 24 positions. I'm not saying that we'll fill all 24. We're not in a hurry to fill all 24, but we are in a hurry to do to make sure that we bring in additional capacity that is very positive and can help us get the work done. So chairperson, you asked that Johan's instruction zone presentation be done at 10. That he therefore jumped to the second presentation that you asked from the SHRA. Okay, there's just a couple of slides before I get to the pipeline itself. There's the pipeline, but I just want to, because the pipeline obviously has to be managed by quite a lot of focus placed on transformation and empowerment of the SHIs, for example. So we have some preliminary data that we're really still refining, which I think is quite interesting. First of all, the capacity is growing. Just before I say the capacity is growing, the demand for accreditation outstrips the actual approval of accreditation by quite a long margin. So, as my colleagues from council will be able to indicate, the last round of accreditation applications, we processed not the re-accreditation, but the new applicants, was a total of 34 applications. Out of the 34, we only managed to recommend 2 of the 34 for accreditation, and they both required conditional accreditation. In the last round, which was last January, we approved a total of 5 accreditations. 3 of them were reapplications, and 2 of them were new applications. So the 2 were out of the 34. So, Chairperson, we're trying to get the balance right between volumes and quality. We're not there yet. I think it is still weighted more towards volume than it is weighted towards quality. The second column from the left tells you how there's been growth in the number of agencies accredited. In 13, 14, and 17, it grew in 15, 16, and 15, and in 14, 15, and 15, 16, and 49. And then in 2016, it grew to 58. I didn't realize I hadn't updated the slide. The latest round of accreditation, this is an early set, is actually 60, and then it's climbed to 65. I apologize for that. I didn't pick that up. There's now a total of 65. 55 conditionally accredited, and 10 fully accredited. If you look at the statistics, because we've also been quite interested to follow the transformation baseline, and the baseline doesn't look too negative. In fact, I think it does look more positive than even we were anticipating until we scrutinized the actual data. So in 2014, if you look at the profile of the SHIs, and the profile I refer to either ownership or control, so it would be board of directors if it was an NPO, that it hovered around about 70% in the profile that we are happy with. We need to eventually submit a final audit report in this regard, which we will do to council. But it at least gives us an indication of how well the Shah is doing in that regard. The second slide, the first slide is about agencies themselves. The second slide is about the projects. So on the second slide, as you know, we've had 7 ships, and the right hand column shows you in regard to ownership and control as defined under the TPPE Act, that the statistics have been very different from year to year. You see there's one where it's 100% and the lowest one is 38%. If you average it out over all 7 ships, it averages at 61% of the approvals, the contract wise. Of course, though, we also need to take into account the size of the contracts. So we do also point out that some of the larger agencies that have acquired contracts, that we have to do more transformation work with those agencies, and that's what we're doing. So, Chairperson, to move to the final stage of the presentation, we're left about who does the project. Now, I haven't got slides on the projects that already exist. I've only got slides on the new pipeline. So, first of all, on how do we go about packaging the pipeline, because I should probably use this opportunity to indicate, just so that all of the members of the committee are aware of this. You are aware that in the past, the way that projects were approved is we put in the newspaper and on the website a call for proposals. First of all, there was an expression of interest and then a call for proposals. And it went in tranches. And when people submitted their responses to the call for proposals, some of those proposals and projects were accredited. And those projects are the projects that acquired the RCT grant for that budget year. But what we have discovered is that design of doing things is actually part of the reason for the who are struggling to keep up with performance on the budget. So the new way of doing it is that, yes, we may well publish a call for proposals from time to time. We will, in all probability, publish a call for proposals that is intellectually inefficient because there aren't enough projects in the interest. But applications are always open to project applications. They still follow the same process whether there's a call for proposals or not. So if an applicant comes with a very good project, we don't turn them away and say, no, 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 you must wait until October until we publish the call, because that actually harms our own performance. SHA receives the projects throughout the year directly from SHIs and OEAs. OEAs, by the way, other development agencies, so private sector companies, for example, that are not NGOs. Applicants, both old and new, communicate the project to the SHA and are advised to present the project to the provincial steering committee. We won't get a final recommendation to our council without knowing for a fact that the provincial steering committee has okayed it and that the province that has wants to do the project in the area. Application tools for the financial year are distributed to both provincial steering committee as well as the individual applicants to help them and support them with project packages. So what I'm saying on this one, Chairperson, is that the sector development arm, which on that form chart is the right-hand one, their job is to take applicants who have applied for accreditation, applicants who have applied for project and not been good enough. Their job is to support those applicants if it's worth pursuing and to help them package projects, which we've been doing the last cycle. This round of 14 projects is going to continue later this month. We've actively gone out and we've given support to those applicants to make sure that they package their projects, because we like the projects, they're good projects, they're well located projects. Packaged projects are then received by the SHA, either physically in electronic form or by emailing it to the address that's on the screen, investment@sha.org.za. Files are acknowledged and the normal admin process is gone through and then it's in the pipeline. So you see this now, we have 54 projects currently in the pipeline. Projects are then set for compliance with a minimum investment criteria. So these are criteria such as, for example, you have to have support from the provincial government, you have to have a letter, you have to have land royalty agreement, you have to be in the construction zone, etc., etc. Projects are also assessed for readiness and are categorized according to priority on the basis of readiness. It goes through the following stages. First of all, project packaging is done by sector development, which is the right-hand box. But it's also done by the portfolio manager. When the portfolio manager needs somebody from our panel to assist package the project, say, on the financial modeling side, then our portfolio manager, who's in the project department, will then table a report to Dexter asking for sector development to deploy somebody from our panel. I'm sure you saw that our panel is also advertised and now have a panel, or we're about to finalize it. The second step is that the project goes through a pre-assessment stage. I'll tell you what a pre-assessment stage is. This is what I referred to earlier, where it's done by the regulator, not the project team. These are the people that raise the red flag or the green flag to say, don't touch this project, or this is a very good project, it's compliant. It's not the project people chasing their targets. After that, it goes to the evaluation stage. Under our TEC terms of reference, this evaluation stage is not exclusively done by internal staff. We also have the support of external evaluators to make sure that segregation issues are at the standard that they need to be and that you get as many views on the project as you can get. Then it goes to the adjudication stage. Not the final stage. This is a four-member technical evaluation committee that sits with the financier who is going to finance the project, and that sits with the provincial government officials or officials in whose province the project is located, and we adjudicate the project. After we've adjudicated the project, it goes to the investment committee, who then recommends the project to the council to finally award the project. So you can see there's very strong segregation of duties leading up to the final project approval. Chairperson, to go now to the last part of the presentation, and that is what is in the pipeline. There are a total of 54 projects in the pipeline. The committee, though, must not get too enthusiastic. because we have the potential to have many, many more projects in the pipeline. We are aware of many projects that have not yet come into the pipeline, which we want to get into the pipeline. In the pipeline, there are many good projects. In the pipeline, there are also some weak projects. And when I get on to the later slide, you'll see that we've categorized them into three categories. There's also one additional project that has been withdrawn, and a further 17 projects which have not yet been accredited because they haven't been pre-assessed. So if you go back to the slide, they're on bullet number two. They haven't been pre-assessed, so they haven't been brought to the pipeline. When those 17 have got the green light, they're now being added to the 54. The value of those 17 is not well for reason. So you can see that only five of the projects have got provinces have got projects in the pipeline, and the lion's share is in the province of Gauteng, and very, very small numbers from other provinces. So only 981 in Eastern Cape, only 118 in Kwazulu, only 119 in Limpopo, etc. But 23,500 in Gauteng. Obviously, we are in discussions with the other provinces. For example, we've got a list of KZN projects as an example that want to come into the pipeline. We've got a list of Free State projects, but they're not in the pipeline yet because they haven't been registered. And Free State hasn't become registered in those, so they have to just be done. Chair, in order to save time, take these as read. Those are the two projects in the Eastern Cape. Those are the, I forget how many projects in Gauteng. 44. Chair, and then on the right-hand column, we've now grouped them. So number 3, number 4, number 5, number 6 are medium priorities. Town and social housing, which is the strongest, is a high priority because that is sufficiently developed. And then others are low priority. So for example, you see the number 9, the number 10, and number 11 are low priorities. And the reason that we've done it like this, we don't have enough money for 54 projects for a start. Second of all, if we approve them too early before they're actually ready, all we do is frustrate performance against the budget expenditure. So we're grouping them into medium, low, and high. And the projects that we're currently processing are all categorized as high. We take all the projects as red. There's only one in KZN, but we've got a list of 14 that they've given us that they have asked us to bring into the ABC, bring into the medium term expenditure framework. And we are in discussions with KZN on that at the moment. Limpopo has only got the one. But fortunately, we do anticipate more because when you're having the ABC presentation, you see that I think four new projects have been approved around 45. Mpumalanga has got six. Those are the six, low, medium, and high. Western Cape has got none. But Western Cape is one of the provinces like KZN that's in discussion and like Free State, who say that they can generate, but it's over a very long period, but they can generate, they've got projects on the burner, which total 24, almost 25,000 units. Not all of them are in the MTF area, and they are only going to submit them once the funding structure is reached. Chair, to end off, the enabling factors that will help us resolve and improve performance. First of all, the restructuring zones, because many of the projects in our pipeline were located in zones that are on the list that Johan is going to present, but were not originally part of it. Also, the ministerial approval on the revised funding structure for the program, which was recommended in December, and that's the minister to the minister. For the time being, a further 14 projects in the pipeline will be considered for part of the award at the meeting, and this is the list of 14, which totals 8,171 potential units. You see there are some in Mpumalanga, three, but they're quite small ones. There's one in the Free State. There's one in Hale, which is currently 5 to 4, but we can get through. We believe we sorted it out, and the rest point of view that it's designed as a hillside project, it's designed as a social housing project. We've even got the quick scan C and the quick scan A and the quick scan B, which is how we evaluate projects. But the thing that has been stopping us, which has made it impossible to approve, is the fact that the Free State is one of the three provinces that lag behind on recommending destructive zones. So we need this zone to be approved, and we need the province to submit the zone as a recommended zone, or an agreement to be made that zones can have a 10-kilometer radius, which is under consideration. And some of the provinces have recommended 10-kilometer radiuses. Even our council investment subcommittee has recommended 10-kilometer radiuses. This particular project is only between 6.5 and 7.5 kilometers away from the CBD in Brooklyn. So these are just pictures, Chair. I'm just giving you an indication of how performance can certainly improve quickly, but is highly dependent on things like target approval, funding structure, and emissions from the provinces. I think it's there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, thank you for you with the answer inside. Let's allow the presentation on social zone to take place because it is big themselves, you can send us a stretch, there's not going to be a comeback for it. Take it now, they are looking at that stretch.
I'll speak to the NHPRC.
This
are you okay?
Good morning and good morning to your members once again.
the missing provinces at this stage. Free State is not performing, despite support that we have provided to them. Some of the municipalities are not coming to the party, as it were. However, we are continuing consultation and support to the province in order to finalize whatever is happening in Mangaung as well as in the balance of the state. In the Northern Cape, there was support for two municipalities or restructuring those two municipalities, namely Kamakara and Zakhadani. However, the municipalities did not get a council decision on the specific areas within those municipalities. We got back to them, they haven't responded, with the result that we have decided to go ahead with recommendations to the minister, and once the Northern Cape and those two municipalities are ready, we will then do additional submissions to the minister. In the northwest, there seems to be a bit of a problem in the fact that the northwest province and the municipalities have not reached agreement. So those are the three outstanding provinces, Northwest, Free State, and the Northern Cape, we can go back to the minister. This will, to an extent, I suspect, have an effect on the pipeline, which the SRAR is envisaging. We will obviously, as soon as possible, finalize these three provinces for further implementation. In summary, Madam Chair, we are recommending 158 new restructuring zones to 38 municipalities. These have been approved and supported by MINDEC, and these have now been submitted to the Minister for further consideration. I may just indicate that almost 50% of these restructuring zones are in the prioritized municipalities as in the master social plan. We have prepared maps for the minister which indicates each and every proposed restructuring zone and the exact delineation thereof, and how it fits into the master social plan and the prioritized municipalities. Madam Chair, for the sake of completeness, I've added the list of the municipalities, the towns, and the names of the restructuring zones which have been submitted to the Minister for consideration. The maps are available for each of these specific areas that you see in the right-hand column. We can make that available to the committee. Yesterday there was a bit of a challenge in getting maps of a fairly large size electronically from Victoria to Cape Town, but we would be happy should members wish to have copies of these maps specifically to provide that to your secretariat for this submission. Madam Chair, that was quick, but that really concludes my presentation. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much for that presentation. Colleagues, the importance of the presentation is that I think the new master kind of speaks from what you understood earlier, that transversal zones have to be selected by the minister. And of course, all social housing has to be within the social zones. So that's why that presentation is critical. That's why it had to be made with the SRAR presentation, because it talks to each other. Thank you so much for that presentation, gentlemen. Now, we have had, we have played two presentations, but in the end, it's one presentation. Yeah, my left has three, but at the end, it's one presentation. So I'm opening up now for questions of clarity and comments. now, so that and even those questions that you want to understand more. Remember, portfolio committees are also a school where you can ask questions so that you know more and understand more. Don't feel bad. Thank you very much. Questions, clarities? Honorable Stone, Honorable Baker, Honorable Latime, Honorable Sabasha, Honorable Minister. Oh, did you, Honorable Pan, Honorable Matau, Honorable Pan, yeah. You all want to talk, but you're not sure what you want to say. Say whatever you want to say.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, mine is on slide number 16. The first presentation. Because if it should be the bullet number 2, it is awaiting approval to the revised funding structural check. The structural concept to the issue on 1st December. 2016. However, for the time being, a further 12 pipeline project is looking at for RCG award on the TG in the Ministry for Affordable. If they can answer the question, because they'll get what they explain. And then the other one, Chair President, is on slide number 22. Slide number 32, Chairperson, is the fund of the fund on social development. If you check under Cardinal, there's nothing there, and Jimson, there's nothing, and other parks, there's nothing. What is happening? What is happening? I'm not saying because I'm not from the city, but I want to find out. Even on page 23, they are the same in Chairperson. And the last one, Chairperson, is on page 26. On page 26, Chairperson, it should be confirmed on the Bombo. They can help us on the question.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. On the first presentation, page 29, there's indexed income there. I think it's still waiting approval on that. What's the time frame? What can we expect? Or how far the discussions in that process? And then I don't speak of particular slides, just the Lekwa municipality is on the end list of infrastructure grants. Now, I was there too to adopt the huge development that is already in existence there. I think it's Ward 8, Extension 8, I could be wrong. Those units are not occupied. They cannot be occupied because there are no essential services being provided. There's no water, there's no electricity, no sanitation. To my understanding, they're not going to get essential services because Lekwa does not, the town itself does not have an adequate supply of water. The wastewater treatment plant is totally dysfunctional and they're on the Eskom cutoff list. So those units are actually being vandalized as we speak, and yet more units are being constructed as we speak. And they're still on the list of this. How can we approve this when the situation on the ground is actually not practical to build units there until they resolve all the issues as a municipality? What progress has been made that the department is able to respond in resolving the issue with those units that are standing vacant? When are they going to be occupied and when are those services going to be provided? And with regards to the hillside view in Mangalore, we were kind of whispered to that there was some kind of a dispute ongoing with that given some background as to the progress on it. When is it going to be completed? When is it going to be occupied? What are the problems with it? Thank you. I'm not sure, Chair. I think it is. But that's the department is. It was highlighted last year sometime. Okay.
Well, we're dealing with social houses now. I just wanted to understand those who sort of being vandalized. Are they social houses?
I think it is.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first start by welcoming all the presentation mates. And I'm on the presentation on the structure of zones. I'm on slide number 15. I just want to get clarity in terms of Uruguay, because it is said only for manufacturing zones are permitted, and it is only in one municipality. What is it? And why is it only one? Is it because, the Northern Cape, where they are saying the MEC of human settlements are permitted only those two? I just want to get clarity to whether it's because of the partition of the MEC or Ramahala. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam.
Someone to join in the acknowledging the petition. What I want to find out, first of all, it is on the first presentation on social housing sustainable strategy. Whilst we are talking about availability of jobs or lack of thereof. It says the structure in SRAM that seems to be too big at 44. I am not sure. It appears as if it's over and over. Also, I'm noticing that in the whole department, there is a tendency of having to restructure after they have gone on a tangent, and they have to come back. Is there no proper planning from the beginning? Why is it that it looks like, for instance, in the NHBRC 10-year presenting, they are restructuring. There is another one, the SRA is coming on restructuring as well. I'm just wondering whether there is not enough planning before people embark on some kind of strategy. The other question is, in an area like the Eastern Cape, where there is worse poverty and a greater need for housing, isn't there a way we can fast track the delivery of the SRA product instead of, like, for instance, in areas in the KFC area, there is stagnation, and most of the identified areas in the slide are not yet getting their SRA share of housing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. state that the provinces of Northwest, all states, Northern states, are amongst all provinces who did not reach happiness as the municipality ever did before. And that alone has a negative effect on the tripartite. And that's a worrying thing, because it seems as if provinces do not comply, and there are no steps taken in terms of assuring the diplomacy and assuring compliance. What is the department's role in making sure that whatever that's been identified, the provinces take hold and actually achieve it?
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. That's another thing to touch.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. Just join the colleagues and the members that have appreciated the presentation. I'm sure the Council of Polish Staff satisfied presentation that was made. Particular Chairperson, you are comfortable that the presentation on the restructuring on the turnaround package that has been presented seeks to address issues. Not issues that have been raised by all the national treasury, the AG, the performance of our department and the agencies. We monitor this person and it's being implemented by the in the department, and I think we must come closer to it on a quarterly basis and make sure that we bring sharp to the level that should be. I noticed that sharp is even considering of changing the name in here in the council when it is implemented. Also, what we want to stress, Chairperson, is that on the organograms that are proposed, we must make sure that they have a communication strategy that will deal with the turnaround situation of the institution. But also, in some stage, the DG themselves indicated that they want to increase the market for SHRA, has recommended to the department to increase the primary market from 2,500 to 500 to a higher number, and even up to like even 7,000 to 10,000, as I was saying, even up to 15,000. As a market basket for the tenants for SHRA. In some stage, we'd like to really monitor quarterly to have a sense that that is being implemented. And also, for instance, the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation as well. Did recommend it that we increase it like that. So we would really want to see that implemented. Other than that, Chairperson, on the restructuring zones, it's unfortunate that we are having a report of provinces that have not used in the manner that they expected to. Despite assistance given to them by the national departments. One of them is the Free State, and we are requesting speak to you about this before we went to. You said we have raised it because we were part of the order of inspection that was social housing program in that COVID. It would have been better if there was the unfortunately we have that information. But having said that, I'm covered by some of the questions that were raised by a lot of these calls indicated. I thought that maybe where there are no fiscal expenses budgeted for the later years within the MTN civil execution.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me join my colleagues in appreciating the three presentations from Balata and Johan. Thank you very much. I think, like the Chair was saying, that in a portfolio committee, as members, we also get our spirit uplifted when the report gives us information of how we are trying to spread the development throughout South Africa. I think it's always encouraging to know the that are making. Maybe just starting with what everybody was talking about in his presentation, the issue of regularizing their irregularized things. I think the department must also ensure that this must not be a norm. You have a plan, you request budget for your plan, now you do something out of, not following emergency, just without it. So irregular expenditures must not be the norm. People must not think regularizing them is part of their task. So I hope that you must know that you not happy that you think you can do things outside what you plan because you later on regularize them. So you think you smile. You want as have a proper plan. I joined my colleague when he was talking about the restructuring member bank. Restructuring, if it is done more often, this disorganizes even your workforce. It's something that people who are in new position would want to do it. But it's not a good thing for us. No. A structure must be well thought, the department must apply its mind. So once the structure is there, it should not really change when a particular senior people changes. So because the standards are not for some senior people, are for us to deliver services to the people. Now if it's changeable, then you because it's also wasting time when you are restructuring the pace of delivering to the community gets delayed because people are worried whether they are going to be accommodated in the structure. So even though the chair is always insisting that people must not lose their job, but we lose our work. So we're losing. People are guaranteed because the things of the portfolio were clear that people must not lose job, but then the services to our community is what we are doing. So I think, please, the department must ensure that we must not structure all the time. Let's see, please. Consider it properly. Once you agree, now you can be changing structures forever. Now, I'm quite clear that the structure can deliver in the, I'm still with you. The CEO and the support staff and then the four executives, they are all complementing each other. But I think my area of concern in the whole social housing
what I want to impress on you is why this, you see, our job as a government, this government after 1994, is to transform South Africa. Now, the pace of transformation in various areas, whether you talk your staff, whether you talk things that we do, whether you talk people that we work with. You see, for example, you know the estate agent in South Africa, he's still really white. He's informed by the previous regime. So what are we doing to change that? We have visited Japan at the beginning. We still met estate agents that were white. When we thought transformation would then mean you must empower those that were not empowered before. So even in the construction, we expect the same. So, you know, transformation covers lots of areas. Construction, estate agents, and many other areas. And then it comes also to the your staff. So I'm saying, if the CEO, the department, and everybody can ensure when we talk transformation, it must not be a theory. When we go, we must see the transformation. Even in ownership patterns, even in the construction, it must not be one popular contractor. Mm. Even if that contractor is black, we must empower people who are not known and become known people. We see, because we do see in one area that hey, this one is popular everywhere. Then that is not transformation, even if that is a black. So transformation means extending the cake to people who were nobody, people from informal settlement. They must become now contractors because you guys are assisting them. So I'm saying transformation, those that, because transformation must not only be thought to be a responsibility of the development and transformation executive. CEO and the rest of the core executive are responsible for transformation. So we will want to, it embarrasses us when we go and we get a bit of smile when we were in place that, in that hill's view. So the person that was there, the people that were shown, were quite a good result of the transformation, which meaning you are changing even the construction patterns, the people who are growing. So that contractor, the contractor in service is now at higher level, which means he started lower, now it, so we appreciated that kind of, because we have a duty to empower those that were not empowered. So quite an important performance that we must indicate that we want to look into. So please be aware that you are noting the provinces that are left out. Freestyle, I think you must sort the issue as a Freestyle, because you should be having more of the social housing project there, because we visited a number of them, so I don't know how this thing, the structure is going to work, but I think because it's an area that I think we were quite happy with what we saw there. I still would want you to come back and say the kilometers, how do they work? So I think I've heard the issue of kilometers, so the radius. So, because I think what we were happy about is that it was also integrating communities right in town. There was a total, the last problem we visited was right in town. So we were quite, because we don't want black people to be put further away from the CBD, like the apartheid was doing. And if we are transforming South Africa, so CBD towns must also be giving everybody opportunity to stay in those areas that have facilities. So Freestyle should really be appreciated if the chair will need to impress maybe we must impress on where they are lacking, because this is quite an important area. Not where. It is unbelievable. I don't understand why it is not really prominent. You have an aspiring town such as Rustenburg, with Madibeng, with Klerksdorp and Potchefstroom. You see, Mafikeng. So I think it is anomaly that Northwest is not prominently getting there. I think maybe we will then follow up on this issue. What may be the reason why are they not prominent there, but who would want that them to be prominent? I would understand with Northern Cape, because the focus would be really key value. And also, you know, looking at population also, so to our own daily pushing more in Northern Cape, but in these other areas where population is growing, so I think we need more work to happen there. I think, Chair, but generally the presentation were quite clear, so the officials, it means that they thought about what they must present to the portfolio committee. We respect you for that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Members will not have been here for long. We will all agree that when SRA used to come in front of the portfolio committee, we all used to have palpitation because of the cultural shock that we had when they first came to us. And what we used to see here, when we started with the portfolio committee, 2014, 2016. So it's actually quite refreshing that we are here now representing a turnaround that is, you know, actually the actual work that we are doing, instead of coming here answering questions, because most of the time when they used to be here, it used to be a question of them, us trying to deal with all the regulations that they have to deal with. So thank you so much for turning the turnaround. I think for me that's the refreshing part. But whatever that I need to have the clarity on is that when we were dealing with those problems, one of the things that we were discussing was that the investment arm of the SRA was going to be consolidated together with the DFAT, and we were going to be left with the regulatory aspect. But when you look at the structure, you still have an investment. I just wanted that clarity, what's going on, because that's what we want presented to us at the time. I know the detail we might get when we deal with the APP, but I just wanted to have that clarity. The other part is that is a little bit for me worrying, is the fact that in terms of the projects that come in front of you and those that have been approved, the numbers of the approvals get very low. Sometimes you have like 34 that are in front of you and only two that are approved. I'm not making an example of the numbers. And I know, obviously, the regular process that you take to make sure that you get the best out of it. But what I want, the question I want to ask is, those that fall off, what is it that SRA does to make sure that it empowers them to be able to correct those areas that have been seen to be wrong, so that when they come back, they are able then to meet the requirements? In other words, what therefore empowerment processes are there to make sure that they are able to perform? I'm aware, I'm a bit worried about the fact that the bulk of your pipeline projects are from Gauteng, 44 to be precise, very few from other provinces. But that also speaks, I know, to the fact that in terms of infrastructure, some of the provinces and towns have got serious challenges. to these projects being approved, because as what Honourable Baker was raising before is exactly what would be the challenge in terms of some of these things. So the issue of the infrastructure is a big issue when we deal with these social health projects. But how then do we make sure that as we would want to approve this project and then we identify these gaps and green areas, what will I see then that happen at an intergovernmental level to make sure that these gaps that we see, we improve on them? I think that question is not necessarily going to start going to the department aspect. Now, if you look at the restructuring report on observation from Johannes, the last notice was in 2018. Now they are in the process of having SAR being approved by the minister and therefore being done. Now if you look at the gaps in between, 2013 was the last time. So probably we will have some now in 2017, which means probably the next one to be decided will be in 2021. Some of us will not be in government. The pace is a big one for me personally. I just wanted to have that sense. I know I might be trying to simplify the process in terms of what happened in between, but the pace is a big one. From 2013 to 2017, we have not had any, we are going to have any now being approved and then boom, gazetted. They might be gazetted in August, I'm making an example. So what is it that we need to do better to fact check this process? Because for me, this speaks to one, to how we are going to meet the NGP targets and the outcome aid targets generally. Because if we are not having any restructuring zone approved, SRA is not going to have projects or pipeline projects that they have in their pipeline because they don't have any that are successful. Having said that, if then you have last had gazetted in 2018 and SRA now has got 54 in the pipeline, that means between 2013 and now, even that process is a one process. So I'm just saying, from the department and to the SRA, we need to find a way of how do we deal with this. For me, the process seems to be, there is more that we can do in terms of improving this process. And maybe explain to us more so that we can understand. But for me, I'm a big one. I know that having them approved in 2013, the process that take place in between, having projects packaged and everything else for us. But 2017? That means these projects now that we have are the ones that we're going to deal with in this term. Let us just be realistic. It means that the ones that Johan is presenting now, they will be only dealt with in the next term, which is after 2019. They won't be here. If this is the pace we are going with. And for me, that's not fast enough. But that needed that understanding. I don't know if you understand what I'm trying to say. And I hope people can appreciate what I'm trying to say, because I'm looking at the time frames that have happened before, and I'm looking at what's happening now. So it means the happiness that we have about these towns that you are representing actually will only happen in 2020, 2021. Some of us will be dead. We won't see those projects. You understand? So I just wanted to have that sense, so that we can appreciate. So that I don't try to simplify something that is complex. Maybe make me understand. Thank you so much. I think that maybe Rode must respond first, followed by Johan. Yes, it's gonna, no, maybe it's gonna be the last one, because he will be speaking on behalf of the department. So that's gonna be.
So the reason why we are doing that is because with the list of 24 projects in the pipeline, we have to address to that pipeline. So we have all of these applications, and 17 of them are the most advanced applications. We wouldn't be able to operate in a way that we suspended the administrative process awaiting revisions, because revisions will happen from time to time. We've spent, in any event, the last year doing all of the financial modelling to make a recommendation to the Minister on the revisions that are needed in order to improve the pace and improve the quality of projects and to improve the financial sustainability. So that all culminated, as the slide presentation says, with the Shaw Council completing their work on the 1st of December, and now I can't answer the question which asked me what the time frame looks like, because that's for the Minister to answer, but I do know I'm in close conversation with the DG on this matter, and it's right there. It's the Minister's discretion. Then, Chairperson, the second question was related really to the incomplete data in the pipeline. For example, the name of the projects in the Kwekwe province, and the fact that some of the projects don't, the status blank on the budget requirements. There are reasons for this. There's never a perfect project application. Okay, I must admit, the one in the Kwekwe where the project isn't named is a bit of an unusual case. We will sort it out for the applicant. But on the budget case, the reason for this is as follows. Our project application process is quite detailed. So we have a thing called a quick scan A, a quick scan B, and a quick scan C. Quick scan A is the scan that is for the due diligence on the applicants themselves. Quick scan B is for us to check whether from a technical perspective the project makes technical sense. For example, do we agree with how many rands per square meter we will pay for the project? Are we happy that the planning approvals are sufficiently advanced? Is there a land availability? That's quick scan B. And quick scan C is whether the project is financially viable, or the revenue for the project be enough to pay for the cost of the project. So in some of the quick scan B's and C's that have come in, the applicant has got it wrong. And so we haven't populated that. I mean, we get applications somewhere sometimes where the applicant says, yeah, the unit's going to cost R700,000-800,000. So because there's so much work still to do, we're still giving project packaging support to those applicants because we haven't loaded that data in the presentation because the data will need to be cleaned. So I hope that does explain that the project pipeline is it's always under development. It's never that it's ready to go when it comes in, and that explains the incomplete data. But of course, we could always give too much information. We could give a full page on just each application. The initial application that came through the shop, the admission, the first application, came from the only registered and accredited social housing institution in Poland, which is called Quinn. They are the people that own the Runcock project, the people that are there. At the time that they made the application, they did have an agreement with the developer who had the land availability agreement with the city, because it's on city land. So they had that agreement. But as a core agreement, the agreement expired. So the reason why there was a dispute for a period of time is that subsequent to that agreement expiring, the developer, Kenzo, didn't agree to sign a new agreement for pressure. There has, though, been a compromise reached now in that Kenzo, the developer, has agreed to split the project into two phases. The first phase, which is 400 units, that signed an agreement with Freshco to be the client who secures those units from you. So the only thing outstanding from the landowner is still the metro, is for the city to also agree that that's the agreement. It will be completed, phase one will be completed in the next 5 months. You see some of the units in phase one are complete. You went into them, I'm sure you admired the best specifications in any social housing project.
Yeah.
Very, very high quality. But it's still quite a lot of development. It's still taking another 5 months to complete phase one. Phase two is that they only intend breaking ground in the next 2 months. And then that phase two will at least be an 18-month development program. We've asked them for the development program, but they have to give it to us before we take it up to TNT. I haven't seen the development program. So I'm doing it from, because I was there on Friday, I'm doing it from what I report from the discussion. Then on the member asked whether it's not an inflated structure for 44 personnel, 44 boxes in the workshop. I would like to actually caution that we're worried about the opposite thing. Don't forget the Shah is expected to deliver its mandate on a national level. So there are even some of the provinces, KZN is an example, that complained that the Shah does not have a regional office in KZN. I'm not suggesting that we intend opening regional offices. If that happens, it will happen in the future. But 44 people for a mandate this big is actually very mean. We've been very conservative, and we have also we have also reduced the amount of administrative generalist positions. So more of the positions are technical positions. Don't forget, then two of the members asked whether we should actually be doing restructuring, because restructuring after restructuring is a bad thing. You must forget that in the budget speech 2 years ago, the Minister states the Shah under administration. Also, the design was, there were two major flaws in the design, because we are responsible for not performing adequately. The one major flaw was that if you looked at the units in the Shah that had to deliver the houses, there was a technical bad design. I'll give you the specifics. In the development department, that I got just before me, you used to have a whole range of different jobs, and those different jobs were dependent on each other. You had a job called a technical manager, you had a job called a pipeline manager, you had a job called an investment manager, you had a job called a capital grant manager. And what we found was happening is that management and accounting couldn't put their finger on it and see a member who's a public servant accountant. So people were able to point fingers. So it was very important to redesign it. So now we have portfolio managers, and the portfolio manager is responsible for performance on the portfolio of projects and can't blame projects. That was the one reason why we would appeal for you to be sympathetic with this restructuring. We think you've got it right now. The other reason was it was very bad So that's my answer to restructuring. We won't be restructuring and restructuring and restructuring. Once you have a minute to signature with the Jones, stand up and you can scramble. And that's what we've got. We must fast track delivery for the Ethan tape. And we must get Stra's share of funding. I do agree with what the member has said, although I do also point out that the amount of investment that's gone into Eastern tax is quite a handsome percentage of it. Some of the other provinces haven't received their equitable, not called an equitable portion, but I think the members know what I'm saying. They haven't received as much investment as they haven't had in the project. Eastern Cape is one of the provinces that has the most number of students in social housing. But we are about to approve some more in the Eastern Cape, such as the Belgravia Phase 2, which is an increased percentage fund that's coming from the government. I do completely agree with what the members have said, that we need a communication strategy to communicate and make sure everybody understands the logic of what is happening. I think you may have picked up that we do this from time to time. The most recent was on Metro FM, where our supply chain manager took a 20-minute interview, because one of the things we were noticing in our procurement is as much as we complain that we must be transformative, we find that many of our tenders are non-responsive and they don't get people submitting tenders. So we will make sure that we communicate and we have a communication strategy. Then the next question was, it might not be the norm to have irregular expenditure and then to regularize. I can't agree with Member Amezi more than he said, as the member has said. And now that we have our systems in place, let me just say that there is never a non-correct council. If the council or the subcommittee is non-correct, it doesn't meet. It adjourns until its quorum is reached, and that's only happened with the subcommittee once in the time that I've been there. It's correct, it meets once it's correct, it passes the resolution. Once the resolution is passed, it's carefully minuted, and the minute the chairperson of the council signs the written resolution before he leaves the room. So those kind of problems are a thing of the past. And then the other question was, restructuring, yes, I've answered that question, that restructuring to work this organized workforce, and it must not only happen for senior people, because senior people, new people have come in, and we must accommodate senior people. The only thing I'd add to this is I can give the committee the assurance that the restructuring was because of technical imperatives. If the structure had worked, and made sense, we wouldn't have restructured, but we didn't. And we have fortunately accommodated, even though we did have resignations, we have accommodated, we did competency assessments, and we matched each and every warm body that is there to the new structure. So nobody was retrenched. Transformation must not be theory, but must make the unknown to be known. People who don't have access to opportunity to get those access. The reason why it's important for the committee to look at the indicators in the new AP is because we have indicators that when there's an application for accreditation and it's unsuccessful, we have the data on the, let's call it the transformation data of an applicant. And then after it's unsuccessful, we don't just take that applicant down. We go to the external, we pass the resolution, we give the accreditation certificate. The same with projects. If a project is poorly packaged, but in principle it's a good project, we don't just let the project go. We deploy a quantum So because the funds that the SHRA oversees is grants, it's not debt financing. Remember, DFI is charged interest on that. That is a slightly different mechanics. So for now, we will know from the minister when we meet her on Thursday whether she has got guidance for us on this matter. But for now, we're steaming ahead. And then the other question was the number of approvals is low. What does the SHRA do to empower those with four by the way? I'll give two examples. I didn't answer it actually earlier in a powerful way. A good example is we have 24 accredited social housing institutions in our stock. On a quarterly basis, those 24 housing associations need to submit compliance reports. When we find information in the compliance report that worries us, so for example, if they're not collecting 97% of their income, then we have a corrective action. So we currently have 13 of the 24 where there's some more serious and some less serious trouble, and we take that compliance report to the expert and we say, no, corrective action needs to be following corrective action, and we pass a resolution, and that causes the contract to be signed with the SHI for the corrective action. So when the approvals are not enough, we do the same thing. We support the applicant. I mustn't overstate the point because the members are asking whether we just let people sit. We don't just let the applicant sit, but I must admit to the members that with only 20 people, we are not getting to anything quickly enough. Hopefully when the recruitment process is advanced, we will perform better. And then Chairperson, the last two questions I think are actually for the department.
Thank you very much.
The issue of qualifying, why the four zones and why open qualifying? Let me just be honest and say qualifying was almost all, the FOCO was almost in the category of police opening organizations. It was a major exercise to get the FOCO on board. Eventually, I think, Rory, if I recall correctly, it was a few weeks before we went to said earlier, certain provinces responded well, others did not. The mistake that we made was, from the department side, we waited too long before we said, up to now, no more. We are now going to make that a proposal to the minister. The provinces that have, and municipalities that have not performed, you are going to be left behind. And that was the decision that we took there last year to bench. Maybe we should have taken that decision 18 months earlier, and that might have been that certain of the provinces and the municipalities might have come to court. The alternative, obviously, is we currently have 127 restructuring zones. We're pushing for another 138, if I recall correctly. There's so much money for social housing institutions, social housing projects. We also don't want to create expectations in the community or in the municipality by forcing, in inverted commas, a restructuring zone. And then if it is, well, I'm sorry, but we don't have money to cover costs. So one needs to balance those issues. And I think we're almost there. The three outstanding provinces, plus to some extent, I think we could possibly make a contribution. Rory, if I think carefully or quickly, probably in the region of additional 40, 30 to 40 new restructuring zones if we get those people on board. We're the largest secondary towns in the Northwest. Dokwe, Akinsana, Rustenburg, two or three in the Northern Cape. And we might have quite a few additional zones which we might be able to deliver these sort of increases. Yeah, I think I trust I've responded to your questions. If I've missed any, I'll be happy to come back.
Thank you very much. This is really
so, Chair. Chair, I'll just go through and I'll provide some context and so that we just get some perspective around some of the issues. In respect of the issue around the fact that Minister is, as Minister and DG are in at the moment, considering the approvals or the recommendation from the Shra Council in respect of the subsidy bans and the subsidy. I think we need to indicate that Minister referred that for advice from the Shra Council, and that came back to us in December. So I think what we're aiming for is that before or on or before the start of the new financial year, that approval. I think it's important that approval will happen. It's important to contextualize that one of the issues that we need to and I think the portfolio from where it sits needs to understand is that it's all very well moving the subsidy ban. The issue is that if you move the subsidy ban to 5,500 to 15,000, the question you need to then ask, and I think we have a responsibility, is what happens to those households who earn between 3,500 and 5,500. And what we did was we indicated to the Shra that in all your projects, once this approval occurs, what we are going to recommend to Minister or what Minister's approval will say is that there must be a specific percentage of households who fall within the category of 3,500 to 5,000. Because what we don't want, it's very easy because developers then will just start moving higher because the amount of that. And I think it's important that we don't leave specifically the working poor behind in rental housing, because our rental program is not only about middle income and high income. So I think we will just contextualize it, and I think what we're trying to do is try and ensure that there's a big spread, but there's a focus on the vulnerable and the poor in relation to that. So that's what that subsidy, I think it's, that's what that subsidy, so on the face of it, it just seems like well, you solve the problem of affordability, and then someone else leaves behind all those people. And I think as government, we have that responsibility to take care of that. And that's why we've said that to the Shura. In each of your projects where you receive money, you will make sure, and I'm not sure, Rory, I think the percentage is, what, 30%? But 50% of your beneficiaries must constitute between 3,500 and 7,500. That's the minimum that we're asking for, and I think that's the challenge that we put to the market. Because, Chair, I think it's important to note, included in that proposal is moving the restructuring grant individual capital contribution from 125,000 to 155,000. And then over and above that, there's the institutional subsidy of 110. So in many respects, what we've said is that given the fact that we contribute 265,000 towards the capital cost of construction of the unit, we should at least have some say in who gets allocated in relation to that. So that's important to note that. Chair, then the second one is around the restructuring zones. It's correct that we have 127 that is existing. But I think it's important to note in this committee that of that 127, there's only been investment in 13. So the question is, why only 13? You've got 127 already. If you add the 138 that we have now, you're going to have 265. And I think the issue is, and I don't want to admonish you, Chair, but I think the issue is that what we need to say is that the poor performance of the sector in relation to rental housing is not about the fact that we don't have sufficient restructuring zones, but it is about the sector not wanting to transform and change its behavior. That is the problem. And the restructuring zones, the restructuring zones are an important spatial transformational tool because it forces developers to go where they're not comfortable about, or they have perceptions. And I think it's important to note that government policy has shown that the market's not always the determinant of success. If you take what has happened in the city of Joburg, the CBD, post-94, was not what it is today. We've just crossed the threshold of 50,000 new affordable rental units in that CBD. And that is because of our investments, either through the institutional subsidy, the restructuring grant, some of the provincial, so that's about the restructuring zones. And I think what we've said is that as a compromise, let's look at what the 138 is, but you can't have a situation where we have this kind of concentration or monopoly of investment in one specific area. And that's what we're saying. And you can't have a situation is because a SHI submits a project and it's not in a restructuring zone, then we must go and designate a restructuring zone to suit that project. And a classic example is, I mean, you take the examples of Katlong, you take the examples of Langa, you take the examples of a whole range of areas. I mean, Soweto, for example, in that area, there's a substantial amount of investment going around in terms of SHI. But I think it's important to note that there's a substantial amount of households, particularly in areas that are not considered to be sexy and nice, where there's rental that's happening. So that's the issue. So I hope that provides that context in relation to the restructuring zone. And we're not going to transform if we have to adapt to what what a developer or a project wants to achieve. On the issue of the provinces, I think to be fair to the provinces around the issue, particularly the Northwest, the Free State, even the Northern Cape, I think we must be fair to the provinces that it's not a failure on the provinces, because the application for restructuring zones must come from a province in consultation with the municipality. And if you look at those provinces in terms of their municipal areas, there's certain weaknesses, and I think we must be clear. It would be wrong for an MEC to designate restructuring zones for a municipality. And that's the issue. So in the case of the Free State, Chair, I think it's important. The Free State came to us and said to us, you know, we're battling to get applications for restructuring zones from our municipalities. So the Free State has now, together with the HDA, put in place a measure that says let's have that. The other issue around that is that in those provinces where your poverty and your affordability levels are a little higher, you're going to have a reluctance, because I think the issue is that we've designated and we've created this aura around affordable rental in terms of its affordability. So one of the issues that you then ask, I mean, we sit with, is I think the question that Member Baker raised, you sit with units that are not occupied, be they CRU or be they social housing. And it's important in those areas. So even in a province like KZN, what we've said is that you can't have a concentration only in Itequini and some of the larger areas. You've got to be able to open up those areas in relation to that. And if you take, for example, Limpopo, they are doing work in the Burgersfort, in the Lepalale area. But I think what we need to be fair is let's give them time in relation to our ability to achieve those. Okay, then the issue around the investment arm. I think it's important to note that we're indicated, and I think Rory raised this, is one of the concerns that we've raised is the conflict between the investment regulatory function and when at the moment between ourselves, the SHRA, together with the interim board and management of that Human Settlements Development Bank, we're looking at a situation that says what's a acceptable manner of checks and balances. So the problem is you can't have an institution that regulates, that approves projects, and then allocates. And I think it's important to note in the current regime, we've collapsed the restructuring grant with the institutional subsidy, which allows for a better coordination, particularly between the restructuring grant and the institutional subsidy that you had around that. That's the first issue. The second issue is we must be careful that we don't take away the executive prerogative of the MEC. In terms of determining their own priorities, given what their provincial dynamics are, so that's where we are in relation to that. Chen, I think I'll stop there. But I think just to indicate that there has been from our side, and I think from ministry side, we acknowledge that there has been a substantial improvement, particularly in the relation in the management and the operations of the SHRA. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm sure if I'm holding the department, we need to come and give us a proper report. Remember, the issue of the leading development has not come to the political committee, but the briefing has been.
3 hours.
3 hours, because of